Behind the Badge, Illinois, giving you the inside scoop on public safety and those who protect and serve. Your real stories directly from law enforcement experts and get a chance to ask questions about issues you've always wanted to know more about. You have the right to remain informed. This is Behind the Badge, Illinois.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. I'm David Hochberg, your host. We have with us today out in Elgin, Chief Lally, up in DeKalb, Chief Burr, and out in Highland Park, Chief Jogman. This portion of the show sponsored by Team Hochberg, which is a company that I run. If you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, give us a call. We have first responder discount. So give us a call, 855-56-DAVID. Go to 56David.com. Now that that's out of the way, let's get into our topic of the day, which is traffic stops and just what happens with traffic stops. Is it a huge moneymaker? Traffic fatalities, driving under the influence, driving impaired now that we've got legalization of pot. So I know the numbers of fatalities are down, Lou, and you've got the numbers in front of you there. Can you share that with our audience and with the panel here from, I think, 2019, 2018 to current?
Yeah, so interesting conversation. So, I mean, I think all of us would agree, and we'll see if everybody nods, but when you're driving around, it sure doesn't feel like people are following the rules. I mean, it seems way, way different out there than it has in the past. People just kind of doing whatever they want. I mean, that's just kind of what we see, and we get calls, and we'll talk about that. Yeah, traffic's definitely, again, from different perspectives, if you look at it across the country, it's definitely it looks like really bad, but I'll tell you the numbers, shockingly. So NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, puts out annual statistics. In 2019, our fatalities were 36,000 per year, roughly. In 2020, again, with COVID, they went up to 39,000. 2021 shot up to 43,000. And then dipped a little in 2022 to 42,000 and now back to 40,000. So we saw them peak a little bit after COVID. Certainly people's driving habits changed, no doubt about that, after COVID. They're coming down a little bit, but way higher than they traditionally have been still. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. And then, you know, more concerningly, Wall Street Journal did an article May 2nd, 2024, and they're talking about specifically drunk driving deaths. And we're talking about impaired driving, like you said, David, and it could be for any under the influence of any drug or alcohol. That is increasing, and that is a concern for us. So they say drunk driving deaths have increased to levels not seen in almost 20 years. Wow. So that's really high. And, you know, drunk driving arrests have gone down, which we know. And there's a number of reasons for that. We can talk about that. But they cite understaffing, chronic understaffing of law enforcement, which, yeah, guilty. I mean, that's definitely where we're at right now. And then they talk about lack of public concern, which I don't know how they determine that, but that's their opinion. And then the national backlash against police stops. Again, you know, there's been some of that over the last couple of years, too. So it is having an effect. So a little mixed bag there about, you know, fatalities in general and then specifically with the DUIs, but definitely an issue of concern for law enforcement.
I got a quick question. Does it break out the drunken driving, deaths by drunken driving? Because we just had a horrific incident up here in Glenview a couple weeks back. Some lunatic was driving on Willow Road or Lake Road in a very narrow residential area in excess of 100 miles an hour, T-boned a kid that just would graduate at Glenbrook South High School, and his girlfriend, you know, the guy that T-boned the two high school kids, perfectly fine. The kid driving the car, he's dead, and his girlfriend was in serious condition at Glenbrook Hospital. Does that break out? If it's the drunken driver or if it's just drunken driver caused accidents and deaths?
NHTSA really probably goes into great detail with all that. I was only able to quickly pull up just kind of the more global trends.
Got it.
But yeah, so couldn't answer the specific, you know, specifically as to what the causes are. But they do. NHTSA's like, they go into every detail. Our crash reports contain all kinds of information that we submit, as do the other states. So they're able to say, you know, speeding generally is the biggest contributor to fatalities and to crashes. It always ranks number one, but they're able to determine what usually precipitates a crash or a fatal crash, but not my notes.
All right. So let's go around the horn and Chief Lally, What are you seeing out in Elgin? You know, one of the largest cities in Illinois. You've got expressways there. You've got huge entertainment complexes there. Lots of bars, lots of restaurants. You know, people like going out, having a couple of pops, and getting behind. What are you seeing, and what are you doing to try to combat that from happening in your town?
Yeah. So first, I would say to Lou's point, you know, what you see, I think, especially post COVID, I think, you know, there was a point in time where there were literally no cars on the road. So it gives that kind of false impression where people are like, oh, you know, everything is okay. And then all of a sudden people start, you know, the stay at home orders are done and people start traveling again, and motorists are on the roadway. You know, I think, post COVID, I think that little break, it really shined a light on how much traffic there is and traffic complaints. I will tell you, at my chief's meeting, neighborhood group meetings, emails, we get a lot of traffic complaints. So our neighbors, you know, people in neighborhoods are saying people are speeding, they're running stop signs. And so we do things on our end. Obviously, we have a traffic division and, you know, we'll put out a speed trailer. And obviously, we only have X number of officers, and to deploy your resources and to allocate your resources efficiently, you want to know what time are these people speeding? So you put a speed trailer out there, you collect the data, you narrow it down to a certain point of time, and you say, okay, let's go do some saturation patrol and try to, you know, make an impact. And so I always tell a lot of community members, you know, because the other thing I'll hear is we never see a police officer in our neighborhood. People are speeding. And so I said, well, even though you may not see the officer, they may be there, but you just, when you walked out of your home or to your car, you didn't happen to see him. But that perception that, you know, there's not enough officers to, you know, really kind of affect a reduction of speed complaints, traffic complaints, whatever the case may be. So, you know, we routinely, whether that's directed patrols, we have officers who some of their ancillary duties, they really just focus on certain neighborhoods where we get a lot of traffic complaints. We have a transparency hub where you can go online and you can submit your traffic complaint. We have traffic data out there too, because a lot of times people will say, I've never, you know, you're not making any traffic stops in this neighborhood. You can go on our transparency site and you can see the traffic stops that have been done. With DUIs, obviously we participate in a state grant. So our focus, you know, we have officers who are, you know, really focusing, especially on holiday weekends, on DUI enforcement. I'll give you guys just some stats, you know, overall in Elgin. I just pulled it up this morning, and I'll give you kind of like a 5-year snapshot. So in 2019, we had 156 DUIs. So that's the number that we arrest that we made. 2020, it went down to 98. And so obviously, again, stay-at-home orders, people are not out, businesses are closed. 2021, it jumped a little bit to 103. 2022, 103. 2023, 99. And then 2024, year-to-date, we are at 102. So, you know, when you look at those numbers, you know, that's a – and again, those are from – let me clarify too. Those are from May year to date. So those are just the first 5 months of May for each of those years. So we're on track probably to double, you know, maybe get to those pre-pandemic numbers. But I will tell you, it is absolutely, I mean, when I drive to work in the morning, I live in Elgin, and I will tell you, I mean, it's, if you literally just take, like, you just, your only job is to look to see how many traffic offenses you could see within 1 mile radius, it's everywhere, right? So we obviously don't have the resources to put an officer on every corner, but we are very particular in terms of using our data, doing that deep dive analysis to get the best times, the best places where we then can use our resources. So between grants with the state, our traffic unit, our patrol officers, making sure the community knows what we're doing as well, it's important that people know that we're trying to put some resources there, and I could tell you probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and this is just a short story, but we were having a community meeting, and people in that neighborhood, they were very upset about speeders, and people would cut through their streets because it was, you know, adjacent to main roads. And so we put a speed trailer out there. We get the data. Here's the time frame that you're probably going to catch most speeders. And on top of it, the speeding, you know, people at the most were doing maybe 8 to 10 miles over. So they really, it wasn't this egregious 25 miles per, you know, over. And nonetheless, we go out there, we do a directed patrol for a couple days, and come to find out the people who are speeding in the neighborhoods are the people that live there. And so we go back to the neighborhood group and we say, hey, just so you guys know, we've written some citations, we've done some education, some enforcement, but you know, these are people that live in the neighborhood. They're not necessarily people who are, you know, cutting through. And on top of that, you know, I think it's very hard, especially with speeding or traffic issues, the perception that people feel, like you can't overcome someone's feeling. If I tell you, I feel like I never see an Elgin police officer, I feel like I can counter that by saying, okay, well, here's the data, here's the information, here's what we're doing. But people are still going to feel a certain way. So that's just a constant education and communication and then enforcement when it's appropriate. So that's kind of what we're seeing here in Elgin.
I think we're just the way society has changed, just making a big macro statement. Your perception, a person's perception is their own reality. And, yes. and you could tell them whatever you want to tell them. Hey, we've had 10 patrol cars through your neighborhood in this 24-hour period of time. And five of them, you know, were when you were sleeping, probably when you want somebody patrolling when you're sleeping, and they won't hear it because they didn't physically see or personally see the car. So thank you for sharing that. Dave, what are you guys doing up there in DeKalb? I know we talked about this a couple of weeks back. You just had that officer with DeKalb County. That was a drunk driving incident who lost her life with that truck driver. So what can you do? What are you doing? How are you combating this? And how are you bringing this awareness to the residents of DeKalb?
Yeah, so, I mean, just like Chief Lally said, I mean, the one of the hardest things to do is to change someone's driving behavior. I mean, truly, like, I mean, and that's really the goal. I mean, it's not about the tickets. I think like Chief Jogman said earlier, you know, the money that we receive from these citations is not this, you know, we're not making, you know, money off this. City makes a certain portion of it, of course, comes that way. But it's, you know, it's divided out different things. A lot of people just assume, oh, no, they're writing tickets and they have a quota, which we do not. Most of the police departments have gotten away from quotas. I don't know too many departments that still have those days. But at the end of the day, we're trying to change driving behavior because due to COVID, I mean, we were in a caretaker mode during COVID as law enforcement. So and when you're in a caretaker mode, you're not making traffic stops. You're not getting out. You know, we were trying to, and I was with the state police at the time. You know, I told the guys, look, we're trying to reduce the contact that you have so you won't get COVID. We're trying to prevent that. So, of course, we reduced traffic stops. And one of the things we saw post-COVID, which was weird, we started seeing some major crashes at like 8:30 in the morning on the interstates. And the reason why, because normally at 8:30, you're in gridlock, right? Post-COVID, when people just started getting back, they were traveling in traffic patterns that would resemble 12 a.m.
Yeah, and it was the Autobahn. Yeah.
8:30 on a Tuesday, right? Yeah. And we were seeing rollovers. We were like, holy, you know. But it was because normally we were in gridlock. You're doing 2 or 3, 4 miles an hour, usually 8:30 on a Tuesday morning on the Dan Ryan. A little bit after, like post-COVID, before people start coming back to work, I mean, they were doing 80, 90 miles an hour. And they were rolling their cars over. So, I mean, it was insane. But you know, like Chief Lally talked about, like when you're in your town, I dropped my mom off Saturday and I usually, you know, she lives on a residential street on the south side of Chicago. Parking is limited. So usually I'll double park and then I'll get out and let her out, you know, walk her to her door or whatever. So I'm getting out of the car. This guy blows past me and I'm telling you, the street, you know, Chicago streets, they're tight. This dude had to be, man, I mean, he had to do 60, at least 60. And he shot right past us. And, you know, and my mom was like, look, they don't care. I'm like, yeah, I know. I mean, it's obvious they don't. So, and when she's, you know, and it's true. I don't think people understand the impact of these. Because it's one of those things like, oh, it's just a minor violation. Yeah, until somebody gets killed. You know, then what? You know, it's minor until then, right? And it's, and as you mentioned, you know, Deputy Musil, who died just recently because she was struck, doing exactly what we're talking about, traffic enforcement. She was on the side of the road, you know, running stationary radar, and she got hit by an impaired driver, right? I mean, our officers are in these perils all the time because we encourage them to do these things. Now, we encourage them to do them in locations that are safe, but sometimes, I mean, it just finds you. It's a weird dynamic, hard to explain. You know, it's like, oh, I run radar there my whole career, and I've never been hit, and all of a sudden you get hit. So, you know, it takes me back to Scott's Law. Scott Gillen was a lieutenant with the Chicago Fire Department. I know, you know, and the reason I'm bringing this up because I was the OIC for that situation. It happened on the Bishop Ford, and that's how we got Scott's Law. And it was unfortunate that he died, but his death didn't go in vain because we started, you know, legislation came with Scott's Law, and even that was something that had to be taught to our drivers, you know. And now, and I've watched people as I drive on the interstate, and I'll be honest with you, the majority of the people I see now actually started to move over for law enforcement. I see it more and more. Sometimes I do my own little count as I'm driving down the interstate. I'm like, wow, they moved over. He moved over. She moved over. I'm like, all right, so now you're talking about changing. Like, so, like I said, when we're talking about drivers, you know, how we can change their posture and how they drive and making them safe drivers, Dave. So, unfortunately, Scott Gillen's death, as tragic as it was, you know, we have learned to be better drivers, at least when it comes to moving over for first responders, you know, and so forth. So it's a lot, you know. I'm like Chief Lally. I get most of my complaints that come in, Dave, traffic, speeding. Yep. That's what it is.
All right, so Lou, I'm going to throw it to you first. If you could break down what portion of the $200-some ticket, where it goes for everybody, and talk about, for everybody that doesn't know Highland Park, I mean, you've got the Edens to your west. I mean, you've got people coming from the city flying down the Edens, right? And then you got people coming out of Milwaukee, and then they hit Highland Park, and they either go east to towards Deerfield, or I'm sorry, east towards HP, or, you know, west towards Highland Park and Deerfield. So they've got that speeder mode in their veins as they're getting off the expressway. And also, can you talk about my road rage? Because you've heard me on the radio talking about wanting to put people into the wall that try to cut me off at the last minute and then drive on the side of the road, even though you're not supposed to drive on the side of the road, and how you handle those type of instances.
All right, lots to unpack there. I will hit it quick, each little one, little nuggets. Number one, let's just start with Highland Park. We're a unique community. We do have 94, the Edens, that comes from Chicago and runs up to Milwaukee. We're right in the middle of it. And we're actually the first stop outside of the city that has a stoplight. So people are cruising on 94, doing whatever they're doing, 70, 80, 90, and then they come into Highland Park, and it becomes a resident, not a residential, but it becomes a community again, and they still do 70, 80, 90. So that is a huge challenge for us.
Got rid of the Clavey, that used to be a death trap back in the day.
Great point. So we talk about with all this, there's three tenets to, for our listeners, there are three tenets to traffic safety. There's education, there's the enforcement part, and then there's engineering. You know, we try to do as much education as we can. We tell them again. Like, for instance, right now we're doing a high visibility enforcement campaign in Highland Park, and we've been pumping out information for weeks to let people know we're coming. Come on, you know, please. We look for, our goal is compliance. We don't want to write tickets, but we will, because it needs to be done. But we really, our hope and dreams are that people just drive like they're supposed to. But we do the education piece. It's really important. And then we do the enforcement piece if need be. And to your point, the Clavey Road became such an issue. It was a four-way, because it was one of the first stops, you know, again, as you get into Highland Park on 94, there were a lot of fatalities there. So they re-engineered the road, and now there's an overpass there, and you just go under it. And so those are all the things that we do in our country to try to mitigate and make traffic a little bit safer, and they all complement each other. So we do all of those things, you know. So, and again, in Highland Park, It's no different. We do all, we have speed trailers. We do assessments. We do our traffic unit. Our officers will pull people over when they can. But we talked about it. There's just so much going on right now in our world that is a concern for us. But, you know, they have so many officers out there and they, it gets challenging. So a little behind the badge info for our listeners. So, you know, very interesting. You know, we as cops, we know this. I can't tell you how many times people will call us and complain about traffic. And then we, again, invariably go over and pull people over. And they're one of the first people we pull over. And they literally have had people say, yeah, I want you to stop them, not me. Well, we're all part of the solution. We're all part of the problem. So that is something we run into all the time. The other thing we run into, as Chief Bird mentioned, is quotas. You know, I know you have a quota. You're only writing this because you have a quota. No, we don't. Actually, in 2014, Governor Quinn passed a no quota law in the state of Illinois. There are no quotas for police officers. We're doing it for safety. I know people don't want to maybe think that, but that is what we're doing. And then the last one is, yes, the big one we hear is, you know, I pay your salary. And yes, you do. Interestingly, in Highland Park, so interesting fact for people, and they can go look up their local jurisdiction. You know, on your tax bill, the municipality piece of it is so small. I think in Highland Park, we get 7%, I think, is roughly of your tax bill out of $1,000, you know, whatever that ends up, we get roughly is what we get, 7%. The schools, the park district, the water district, I mean, all those mosquito abatement, there's all these other fees. And so 7% roughly is what we get. When you think about what you get, public safety, police, fire, potholes, public works, I mean, for 7%, that's pretty incredible. So a traffic ticket, same concept. I don't have Lake County's couldn't get find mine, so I pulled up just online, and you can go to your local, I'm sure, county. So this is Madison County, Illinois. So I'm sure it's, you know, it's pretty indicative of what everybody else sees. Okay, so they have a little thing. You can go look it up at Madison County, IL.gov. Average ticket for $120 ticket. They kind of break it down. This is for a 21 and over speeding ticket because there is a difference. 17.8% goes to the municipality that wrote the ticket. So we're talking about $21. 16% goes to a vehicle fund. So there's a statewide vehicle fund that, you know, police departments tap into, but that's a statewide fund. The county gets 15%, so $18. There's a document storage part for $15, 12%. Child advocacy is 10%, goes to an advocacy center in their county. State gets 6.7% to the treasurer's office. There's an e-citation fine, 4.2%, $5, just to pay for the hardware for the court. Drug court gets 4.2%, $5 for a drug court that helps addicts get treatment. Illinois State Police Ops gets 4.2%, and that just there's some statute that they get some money about the automation fee. Automation fee is another different one for the judge's office, 4.2%, $5, and the circuit clerk gets $5, 4.2%. And then just interestingly, when you look at an underage 21 ticket, it's a different breakdown. Specifically, the fine that goes back to the arresting agency is 1.1%, so $1.34 out of that $120. So when we say we ain't doing it for the revenue, we ain't doing it for revenue. 1.4 or 1.1% of that ticket to anybody under 21 is $1.34 out of the 120 that comes back to us. So it's interesting. I mean, again, people aren't going to know that, and that's why we're doing this. We want people to understand. We get it. Getting a ticket, not fun. I will tell you, my personal, I'm going to say it because I got a state police guy on here. I've gotten one ticket in my life. It was by an airplane. So on my way down to Champaign, Illinois for school, and I saw these stripes on the pavement. I saw a sign that says police enforce with an airplane. I'm like, did they really do that? Yeah, they do, actually, because I had a crazy state trooper jump out in front of my car and point me to the side of the road, you know, down the road a little bit. And I pulled over and I waited and I looked in my rear view and she was still like pointing people over and everything. So I'm like, oh, maybe it was an obstruction. So I took off. That was a bad, bad, bad move. She came and found me. I mean, hand to God, I really thought that it was, I didn't know what it was. I was 19 at the time. I thought she was just getting people out of the way. Oh, she educated me. I got my ticket. I went to court. I paid my whatever it was. And so it's not fun. Citations, it's cops hate writing tickets. Really, we do. It's not something we want to do, but we also understand there is a correlation between enforcement, education, engineering, and our crashes. There have been studies that prove that more enforcement, you're going to have safer roads. You're going to change driver behavior. It takes time, but that's why we do it.
Can I just throw this out there now with the population? The popularity of the the pot dispensaries all over the state, right? I mean, that and gambling are probably the only two things that are keeping us afloat here in Illinois. How are you detecting driving while impaired and writing citations if somebody is stoned out of their mind? I mean, obviously you pull somebody over for drunk driving because they're weaving, you know, you could do your tests, walk the line, blow, or take them in to get a blood test. You know, there's a number of different things. Are there any tests to determine that somebody's stoned, you know, so high that what they're driving is not only impacting their safety, but others on the road? How are you guys working through that? Chief Lally, we'll start with you.
Yeah, we have a few of our officers are trained as drug recognition experts, so it's DRE. And so that's I think it's a pretty intense class that they have to go to, because I know when my guys come back, they're like, oh my God, it's like traffic reconstruction class at Northwestern, right? It's very, very hard. So we have officers specifically that are trained. You know, for us, our traffic unit, if there's an officer, like probably, you know, the other chiefs on here, their departments, my department is so young. There's a vast majority of officers that have about 10 years or less, and a lot of them have 5 years or less. So when they stop that vehicle and they believe it, you know, this person to be impaired, and if it seems a little bit where it's not an alcohol, they can't smell it, they might think it's due to drugs, they can call over a traffic officer. We can call someone in to help facilitate that process. And, you know, the one thing I want to mention too, just quickly, you know, in terms of, you know, with traffic crashes too, because this is something that, you know, I had a conversation with, a lot of times when there's a traffic crash, especially if it's really bad, you know, you'll see, and this is the human side to the traffic crash and what happens. So when someone is involved in a traffic crash, especially when it's a fatality, you know, we are going to come out on social media, because 10 years ago, social media was not really an issue in terms of, you know, how this correlates to the human side of what police officers do and some of the tragedies that occur. When we push out on social media, the road is closed, right? Road is closed, traffic crash. We're not going to be putting out until, you know, probably if we even do, that it's a fatality for some time. Because the first thing is, when a fatality happens, there's all these notifications that have to occur to the family, to the friends. And so I caution a lot of times too, people who are very curious about a traffic crash, and they want to put that out on social media because everybody wants to know everything that's going on. The problem is when you take that picture of that traffic crash, and now somebody knows that's my husband's car, that's my girlfriend's car, that's my mom's car. Now you've just put that out there to the world, and people don't have the time to grieve appropriately or to be notified in a sensitive and caring way, whether that's with a clergy member or the officer. That's another hard part of this. Like, the officers that respond to traffic crashes, especially when they're pretty traumatic, some of my officers, you know, that follows them. Like, that you show up, especially if it's a young kid and your kid is the same age, and now you have to look at this. So it's the safety component, you know. So a lot of times when people complain, I got a traffic ticket, or I'm going to make a complaint because the officer stopped me because, you know, whatever. They're out there doing their job for safety, because the community should expect safety, and that's part of their job. But it's also because they've witnessed some of the traumatic things that can happen as a result of a traffic crash. It doesn't necessarily have to be fatal, right? It's life-altering. So, I sometimes caution people, you know, especially with social media, you know, we'll get questions like, well, is there a traffic crash? What's going on? Why this? It's like, well, give us a little bit of time, because if I was a family member, I don't want to be notified through social media that somebody that I care deeply for and love is killed. So, you know, I think sometimes if people take that perspective a little bit and push in some of the humanistic things to why the police do what we do, it's because of the things that we witness and the tragedy that we don't want to happen to, you know, young kids. There was just a traffic crash, a neighboring agency, and I heard it on the news. These kids just graduated high school, right? And now all of a sudden you think about that, right? Like, 18 years old, the world is wide ahead of them, right? This is like the prime of your life and everything. And then your life is taken away because someone doesn't know because they needed to hurry up and get somewhere. They needed to, you know, they're impatient, you know. So I think sometimes, like, if people pause and take a moment to think about those type of things, it kind of comes full circle as to why we do what we do.
Dave, what do you guys do to help your officers to build on Chief Lally that go to these accident sites? It's PTSD. I mean, there's, you know, there's no other way. It's just like a soldier coming back from war. What do you guys do? What do you do to support your officers that, you know, witness something horrific?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's constant. Like you said, it's not the big, you know, it's not like you're getting, you know, it's the small razor cuts. We talk about this, small cuts. We get a lot of them, you know, throughout your career. I mean, all, you know, myself, Chief Lally, Chief Jogman, we've been doing this job for a very long time. So we've had all these small cuts and, you know, and we talked about this, I think, before, how things just trigger you, certain events, certain locations, certain smells, all these things. So they, you know, and one of the hardest things that, you know, and Chief Lally, you know, spoke on it a little bit about, you know, the notification. Like, I'm telling you, that was probably one of the hardest things that I learned early on in my career was doing a death notifications, you know, and especially from a crash because it was unexpected, you know. And, you know, people go to work and their loved ones expect them normally, hey, well, they'll be home by 5 o'clock. They'll be home by 6 o'clock. And then when you show up and they know, believe me, they know. I always told my mom, I say, Mom, if the police ain't knocking at your door, don't worry about it. If they're calling, then things are probably going to be all right. But if you got someone knocking at your door, that's a different story. So they know. As soon as you show up, Dave, I mean, I'm telling you, I've done some notifications where as soon as they open the door, the families just... They just collapse down on their knees because they already know. And it's the saddest thing. And you go into some of these situations, you know, you have maybe a mother with two or three young kids and there's no one else. They're, you know, you're all they have for this short period of time. And you have to show that empathy and the sympathy for them you're all they have. You're almost family to them for this short period of time, and you don't even know them. So that's what people don't understand, how, you know, as you talk about the PTSD, we have to engage with someone we don't know in their hardest of times and hold them. I mean, you give them love that, you know, you're treating them like you would treat your own family member, but you don't know them. And then you have to go back to work. Got to go back to work like that just didn't happen. I mean, it's tough. It is probably one of the hardest things. That's why we talk about doing, the checkup from the neck up, right? These, you know, our guys constantly, we go get doctors, you know, our physical help. We always, I'm physically healthy, but are you mentally healthy? So I love it right now that our guys go and see therapists on a regular basis. And there's no stigma attached to it. Back in the day, oh my God, Dave, you couldn't mention this. You couldn't even say this back in the day. Nowadays, so I got a sergeant who goes every month, and he says, "Chief, yep, I got my appointment, so I'm gonna go see my therapist, and it gets him whatever it takes to get you through it all." Dave, is what we encourage. We assist them with this. When there's a major incident, we have a critical incident debrief afterward. If it's a major incident where multiple people are impacted, and, you know, we try to, you know, some of it we make mandatory for some people who might have been outliers and maybe didn't actually participate in the actual incident, you know, directly, but were affected by it indirectly. We offer them the opportunity to go as well. And it's very impactful. And I would tell you, most officers will initially, and I'm sure Chief Lally and Chief Jogman can attest to this, that they push back on it initially. They don't want to go initially. But I guarantee you this, every time they leave, they say, I'm glad I went. I was like, I know, I was like, we already know. We've been through this ourselves, guys. We know. yeah, we said, I'm good. I'm good, Chief. I don't need it. I'm good. And then they say, no, you're going. And then when you go, you come out of there, you like, Chief, thank you for making me go because I needed it. So those are some of the things that we do, Dave, on a regular basis. Chief Valley, Chief Jugman, they do the same thing. It's all about how you guys, you know, every time I look at my summary, I see a bad incident, I call them and say, how you feeling? And they'll say, Chief, I'm good. I mean, okay. I'm like, I know you're going to say that, but I really want to know, how do you really feel? What can I do for you? Because, you know, I mean, we're in positions now, but most of the stuff that happens, we're in our bed asleep. I mean, we're getting it on the back end, but we've been through it as young officers ourselves. So it's not like we don't know. And so I always try to make that initial contact, Dave, just to make sure that they're okay. And then we take it from there. Whatever I can do for them, money's no object. Let's get it done.
Got it. And again, we're not just talking car crashes. We're talking
all types of events.
All types of stuff. So, you know, we had some a metro line going through our town, you know, the same one. You all got trains going. You know, you have suicide people jump in front of a train. I mean, all of that stuff that falls into this category. I know we're talking mental health, but again, it falls into that going to make that first call.
Sometimes there's natural deaths, Dave. But the problem with some of these natural deaths is that these people have not been we don't even know they're dying. They've been there for weeks. Those are even, I mean, those are tough. I mean, you go into a place, you're like, oh, man, he's been here for 3 weeks. I mean, decomposing bodies. I mean, these are things that officers see all the time. And this was like, this is a natural death, but it still impacts them. I mean, you know, these images, I mean, it's like a camera. All you're doing is taking a snapshot.
Yeah.
Every time you go to an event and we all store it, Chief Valley has hers, Chief Jogman has his, all in the back of our mind. I have mine, and I just learned to manage them the best I can. And that's all you can ask for the police officers. So that's why I tell people all the time, thank the police. This job is hard. They don't understand how hard this job is sometimes. They really don't.
Yeah, Lou's problem. I'm sorry, Chief Lally, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I want to mention too is I think, and I don't know if it was prior to us talking here, but you know, the sentiment of, you know, some communities wanting to ban, you know, minor, whether it's non-moving violation vehicle infractions or these low level moving violation infractions. So, you know, we had a police task force about 2 years ago. And one of the recommendations they made was for the city to adopt an ordinance that would ban non-moving vehicle infractions. And so, you know, the task force came up with over 20 recommendations. Vast majority of them I agreed with. But this one was one was that I was very adamantly opposed to. And I think, you know, the some of the sentiment, you know, and you hear it in some states where they have civilians who are doing traffic stops because they don't want the police contact. It's like, that is a recipe for disaster. And, you know, my sentiment, was, you know, very straightforward. Like, yes, I understand the overarching reason why, right? You want to reduce contact with communities who may feel marginalized, right? You want to reduce racial disparities. There's a whole other, things that we do to ensure that happens, whether it's fair and impartial training, body-worn cameras, training, accountability, all that stuff. But on the flip side, when you start saying, well, we're going to tell officers not to start vehicles for minor offenses. Well, the problem is that you can adopt an ordinance as a city, but that ordinance doesn't supersede the state law that allows officers to stop, right, what's in the motor vehicle code. Additionally, in Elgin, we have the state police that patrol. I have Kane County that patrols. So I have these other jurisdictions that come into Elgin. So when a community member, a person in Elgin gets stopped by a police squad, all it is the police, right? People are not, well, that's the Kane County Sheriff Deputy, or they just think police. So now you can imagine the confusion that causes for community members where, you know, I would say, you know, if I would, Elgin police officers are not going to stop for this, but be advised, if you're stopped by a Kane County person, a state police, that confusion, in itself, is just a recipe for disaster. Secondly, you know, the traffic stop that officers sometimes do, is also a crime reduction mechanism, right? It's an investigative tool that we use for, you know, bigger offenses. You know, routinely I have officers who are stopping vehicles for traffic offenses who are recovering handguns, mm-hmm. right? So it's a way that we're also impacting a crime reduction within our communities to utilize all our resources and implement these strategies that, you know, okay, the traffic stop is not just a traffic stop, but are we having gang issues, drug issues? Are we having robberies, right? So that's another part of it. So as a community, you know, people should want a safe community and not tolerate criminal activity. And part of our tools is to make traffic stops and to use those traffic stops. And again, you know, doing that within procedural justice guidelines, making sure constitutional rights are not violated, right? That's a given. But, you know, there's when I hear some of these and, you know, news articles about, you know, let's have officers not stop vehicles, you know, and we had our, again, you know, my task force had recommended that. And I said, absolutely not. I mean, that was something that I am not going to agree with. Now, if the council, you know, the council decided to table the discussion, you know, ultimately the council is the one that would make that decision. But I am never going to agree to that. I mean, because there's just so many layers of things, the unintended consequences of decisions that people make that they don't think, because we got to solve this right now, right? People are upset about, you know, officers and everything that's happening in the world. And okay, but I get that. And there's a lot of things that we can discuss within that conversation, but the unintended consequences of quick judgments and not realizing the impact that you'll have on your community 5 or 10 years from now. So I think, you know, I would just say when community members hear, or if it's in the news, you really have to think a little bit deeper about, you know, are you just doing a Band-Aid approach, which then is going to ultimately lead to some really, you know, hard, I think, you know, things that will come up that we probably could have just avoided had we just continued to do what we were doing, but keep those safeguards in place, right? Make sure your officers are doing traffic stops appropriately. Make sure search and seizure laws, make sure, you know, I think Chief Lou said, you know, officers don't want to give tickets, right? Like, when you have to give a citation to someone, a lot of times they're giving warning tickets, right? It's an opportunity to have that contact and say, hey, look, I need you to, you know, slow down. And this is why. And, you know, have a great day. And of all the traffic stops that my officers make, a small number, we get complaints. Very, very small number, right? But, you know, there's that human part to it where you're like, ah, you know, I don't really want to ruin this person's day, but I kind of still want them to be safe. So I think there's like a happy medium that we can reach. But we need the community to get on board with us. So every time an officer stops you, you know, do you really have to say, I pay your salary? Like, okay. I mean, I get it. You know, you do pay our salary, but you know, there's also a reason why they're doing what they're doing. And, you know, I think a lot of times people forget that they are humans and, you know, they signed up to do this job, and this is a very difficult job. And when I tell people, we've all been police officers a very long time. When I tell people you have to come to work every day, this is your job. Mm-hmm. People are going to scrutinize everything that you do. They're going to have access to see everything that you do. You can't make a mistake because if you make a mistake, there could be all these legal repercussions from that. Every time you have contact with someone, you have to make sure that you're safe. Like, it's just, think about it. What other job are, you know, where this, the scrutiny, as it should be, right? We're public officials, as it should be. But sometimes when you just take a step back and say, wow, you know, that's a lot for somebody, right? That's a lot. You know, maybe I'll just tone it down a little bit, right? Maybe I won't be screaming right at the officer. You know, maybe I'll just tell him, you know, I'm unhappy and just, but, you know, I really, and this is great that this podcast goes out because it just gives a little insight into the conversations that I hear with officers, right? The other chiefs hear that, you know, man, I'm just trying to do my job, right? Like, now I have a complaint because I was doing traffic. Like, you know, it's, you know, I think giving a little graciousness is sometimes something that I think we all should remember.
I'm going to throw this over to Lou now. Lou, you're in a unique situation. Part of your town is Cook County, and part of your town, no, it's all Lake County? Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay,
well, I'm in many unique situations. That's just not one of them, Dave.
Right, okay.
So before you go on, so let me
go ahead.
You may have a question, but I do want to, I don't want to lose a couple of things that my colleague said. So Yeah, it is interesting. You know, let's look at our fire friends. And I love our fire friends. I do. I'm putting this out there. It's recorded because, God, I know I'll need you when I have my eventual heart attack. But, you know, firefighters can go to a home. It could be a grease fire, you know, on the stove. They go in with all their equipment, basically trash the entire house, put that thing out. And yet they'll get cookies and they'll send them everything. You know, the kind of work we do, we're costing people money, sometimes their freedom. I mean, so it is a different kind of work. You know, we are like Chief Bird said, when you see the police, there's this, we're all classically conditioned. It usually ain't good. I mean, it's like the principal or the dean calls you at home. They're not calling to tell you your son or daughter's just doing a great job. You know, it's just one of those things that we're there where people are always like, oh my God, there's the police, something bad is happening. So when you're starting from there and then you're doing the actual work and pulling people over, they're already amped up. They're already having those feelings about police. So we do all this other work, this education, our community connections, so that we can try to balance that scale and let people know that is a part of the work we do, but we do it to keep you safe. At the end of the day, it is to keep our community safe and everybody safe. And then to just follow up on what Chief Lally and I think Chief Bird also mentioned, you know, we were talking about, you were asked about what we can do for DUI enforcement, specifically with regards to new, legalization cannabis. We have to really, our listeners have to really get engaged and follow these laws that are proposed and then ultimately passed. I mean, I know people don't have the time. We do because it affects what we're doing, but what we're doing affects what goes on in your lives. So, for example, I was on the board for the Illinois Chiefs at the time, when they were talking about the legislation for, legalizing cannabis, one of our concerns we raised, of course, because it's our area, is enforcement, safety. How do we keep people safe? They're working on some, but right now there's nothing that I think is approved. I don't think it's made it to the approved stage of a roadside safety test for law enforcement for cannabis. Okay, so we've got the breathalyzer, very effective, court proven. You can determine from reasonable certainty what somebody's blood alcohol content is, and there's a legal limit. You know, if you're over that, boom. We don't have that for cannabis. You know, you can pull somebody over, but you don't have a way of telling that they smoke it today, yesterday. That's concerning. I mean, that was a concern for us, but they put it in place anyway. We do have the drug recognition expert officers that Chief Lally mentioned, but that is limited in number and in efficacy because even their abilities are, it's not a chemical test. It's not like something that's, you know, like a blood alcohol measure. They can do observations and make judgments, and there are limited officers. So we're a little behind the eight ball with that. And now there's a pending legislation. One of the things that we had that we asked for that to help us kind of blunt the effect of people just, blunt's a bad word. I actually didn't mean the connotation, have an impact on DUIs with respect to cannabis. Was right now the law says you have to have your cannabis in a sealed odor-proof container. The reason for that is if an officer smells cannabis in your car, that's a no-no. You can't. That means we now have some probable cause to investigate further. They're actually proposing that they remove that and that the odor-proof container restriction be lifted. I don't know why. We don't know why. Which means then if there's an odor of cannabis in the car, there's nothing we can do. So legislation is a huge part of this. And to Chief Lally's point, yeah, people are trying to, they're minimizing things. And that's the concern I think we have in law enforcement. What's the big deal? No front plate. What's the big deal? Tinted windows. Well, I'll tell you, if you're the victim of a crime, and you can only get a view of the car from the front and they take off, somebody shot somebody in your neighborhood, well, you don't have a front plate now, so, you know, we don't know who that car is. I had one recently with a family member who road raged. Person was attacking a group of young adolescents, attacking meaning following, flashing their lights. It was at night. They had tinted windows, illegally tinted windows. Nobody could see in the car. How are you going to identify that person? How are you going to make an arrest? How are you going to charge that person? So when you talk about these small, quote unquote, insignificant things, they, to Chief Lally's point, have real world implications. And I think our listeners need to know, tinted windows, it makes the car look cool. Maybe it keeps you cooler. We get it. But there is a legitimate reason that someday it may affect you, because when you can't identify the person who just shot at you or did some other type of crime and you can't go to court and raise your hand and say, I saw that person, I know who they are, you have no case. We have no case. And there are a lot of those things that are going on. So traffic enforcement, again, not great spending the money, not great going to court, don't want the insurance to go up, don't want to get suspended. We get all that. So guess what the answer is? Not get rid of the laws, not enforce them, just follow them. Just drive the speed limit, drive safely, don't drive recklessly, put other people at risk. Follow the rules and we're all happy, and then we'll make no more traffic stops ever. I mean, that's our promise. If everybody follows the rules and does what they're supposed to, traffic stops will end. You have my word.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up to an hour here, so we like to keep it at about an hour. I'll go around the horn. Best tip you could give our listeners to stay safe. I know that Lou just said, drive the speed limit and pop an Ambien and, switch to decaf and relax. Probably not pop an Ambien. Lou was not.
No, probably not the Ambien.
No, Lou's not on record at popping an Ambien.
No.
Yours or a family member's, but maybe switch to decaf and chill out. One tip, Chief Lally, I'll throw it to Chief Berg, go back to Chief Jogman to give us another nugget of knowledge. But, as we close down this segment and this of this podcast, with your experience, what would you tell our listeners about just being safe?
I would say just a couple things. First is the traffic rules and regulations are there for a reason, and make sure you know them, because a lot of times people don't know the law. So make sure you know them, especially if you have young drivers in your home, right? New drivers, make sure you take the time to do some education. Let them come down to the police station. We have simulators that they can drive on. We can talk about some traffic education. So use the resources in your community. And I think secondly, right, if you see a police officer and they're pulled over on the side of the road, right, make sure that you give them the space and make sure that you're being safe and make sure that you slow down. Third, when you are driving, wherever it is that you're driving, right, just, maybe take a step back, and instead of coming in, hot, maybe just takes like a peaceful approach, right? So, and think about the humanistic side to some of the things of what we're doing, whether you do not want, like, if you personalize it, right? I wouldn't want my family member in a crash, right? Maybe I should slow down. The trauma that comes from it, the financial impact, the lawsuits that happen. So instead of, aggressively driving and giving everybody the finger and whatever it is that you're doing, right? Maybe just take a deep breath and slow it down a little bit. And hopefully that, in that 1 or 2 seconds where you're aggravated, it'll pass. So I would say just be respectful of other drivers and ensure that you're doing your part.
All right. Well, we asked for one. We got seven. So
yeah, Chief I'll give Bird, you 10 more too.
Well, you know what, Dave? The reason why is because it really is so hard to give what's one. And I'm with Chief Lally. I just want to make one point about minor traffic offenses. Let me just tell the people who are listening that Timothy McVeigh was stopped for a registration violation, and he was an Oklahoma City bomber. Think about that. And that's why I tell people all the time, don't be so quick to say, they're bothering us, they're just messing with us, that's the only reason they do it. No, we're not. I mean, there's a reason behind, like Chief Lally said, these laws are in place for a reason. We stop people for improper lane usage, you know why? Because it causes accidents. We stop people for falling too closely, you know why? Because it causes accidents. We stop people for speeding, of course, because it causes accidents. So there's a method to the madness. These equipment violations, most officers write warnings for those. I will guarantee you. Nobody's trying to write you a ticket for having a cracked windshield. But is it unsafe? Sure, it could bust on you at some point. So we're just telling you, you should get that fixed. The headlight out, you should get that fixed. You got one out. If the other one goes out, now you have none, and you might not even be aware of it. There are people who they get mad. Oh, my God, I can't. Why'd you stop me? Ma'am, your muffler's falling off. Just for the record. I mean, so I'm just letting you know, just before you, while you're yelling at me, like Chief Lally says, that you come out on a bag on these officers, they might be doing something to help you. And my last point is this, is just be courteous. Mm-hmm. You, as drivers, we have to be more courteous to each other. Allow people to get in front of you. How many times, they got, I'm not letting them in. Why are you doing that? I mean, that's what the yield, you're supposed to yield. Know the rules of the road. I mean, but I think the biggest thing is just be courteous, Dave. I'll just leave it with that.
And I'll add, before I go over to Lou, be nice to also stick your hand out the window and say thank you for letting me in.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. It drives me crazy.
Cost you nothing, Dave.
Cost you nothing. I always roll down the window. Hey, thanks, buddy. Thanks. Appreciate, you know, the merge here, it just people don't do that anymore. It's like drives me crazy on top of the other 500 things that Lou has heard me talk about on the radio up here. So, again, you know, maybe like, hey, you know, I appreciate the space there to merge in before I hit the embankment here. So, Chief Jogman.
Yeah, all right. So we'll end it on, you know, end it on a high note. So I would say, again, we get it, everybody. We really do. I will tell you, when I see a police officer behind me, pulling behind me, even to this day, I'm looking at that rearview mirror going, what the, what did I do? What is it? Even me, after 32 years, I still feel that way, and I'm a cop. So we get it. I would say just a good nugget for everybody. If, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but, you know, we do use unmarked police cars out there to do traffic enforcement. Sometimes you see some things in an unmarked police car. They have lights and everything, but not stickers or a light on the top. And it's important because it's an important tool for us to see traffic in its natural state as opposed to with a marked squad car. But if you're ever concerned, if an unmarked police car puts their lights on and they're pulling you over, you can do a couple of things. You can put your hazards on to let the officer know that, you know, that you're aware. But maybe you're not sure they're really a police officer. Put the hazards on so then you can drive somewhere well-lit if it's nighttime, or somewhere populated if it's daytime and you want to be somewhere safe. And you can absolutely dial 911 and, you know, just let the officer know. Just say, so it is a legitimate officer. They know that you're not trying to run or do anything silly. And call 911 and say, I'm being pulled over by a police officer. I wanted to check. Yes, you are. You know, that officer is with us. And that way you don't have to be nervous or worried about, you know, an unmarked police car, because it can be confusing, because unfortunately there are people out there that use those inappropriately, illegally, and try to take advantage of people. So they impact us. So the last thing on a high note, used to have a radio guy up here in Chicagoland area, Johnny B, Jonathan Brandmeier, used to do the love train. He would get people paying the toll for the person behind them, and the next person would pay the toll for the next person behind them. So I'm going to ask the state of Illinois for all of us to do the love train, and to Chief Bird's point, wave, thank people. It goes a long way. I do it, and then the next person does it. And when we start doing that, we start affecting that culture. So if someone does you a solid out there and lets you in, wave. Trucker, wave. You know, make people know that you appreciate it and don't take it for granted. And we can change it here in Illinois.
If they love give you the finger, wave too.
Just dude,
with, all
right.
with all five. With
no
all
matter five. What. Yeah, hey. That's right. Hey, that's what you say. Love you too.
That's right. Love train here in Illinois. That's what we're going to do.
All right. We'll leave it on the love train. And if you want more information about love trains, you can contact Chief Jogman at the Highland Park Police Department. He's got nothing going on right now. It's pretty slow day. It's been a pretty slow week, hasn't it, Lou? You haven't had
business as usual.
Not much going on in Highland Park past week or two. All right, this has been another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. We appreciate you listening. You could send us comments down below, email all of us, and give us some suggestions on future episodes. While we were talking before, guys, about that First Amendment, I think that's a great topic for another for a podcast, upcoming podcast next week, a couple weeks, because a lot of our listeners see those videos, you know, of the police pullovers, and what we're talking about is, I don't have to show you my license. Why'd you pull me over? I want to see all that stuff. And the people get it on video, and it's their First Amendment right. So I think that would be interesting to dive deeper into that, because, again, it's all over the place, and the World Wide Web is seeing all the stuff. So this has been another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Looking to refinance, purchase a home, give me a call, 855-56-DAVID, 56david.com. Chief Lally, Chief Bird, Chief Jogman, thanks. And you guys be safe and have a great day. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. I'm David Hochberg, your host. We have with us today out in Elgin, Chief Lally, up in DeKalb, Chief Burr, and out in Highland Park, Chief Jogman. This portion of the show sponsored by Team Hochberg, which is a company that I run. If you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, give us a call. We have first responder discount. So give us a call, 855-56-DAVID. Go to 56david.com. Now that that's out of the way, let's get into our topic of the day, which is traffic stops and just what happens with traffic stops. Is it a huge moneymaker? Traffic fatalities, driving under the influence, driving impaired now that we've got legalization of pot. So I know the numbers of fatalities are down, Lou, and you've got the numbers in front of you there. Can you share that with our audience and with the panel here from, I think, 2019, 2018 to current?
Yeah, so interesting conversation. So, I mean, I think all of us would agree, and we'll see if everybody nods, but when you're driving around, it sure doesn't feel like people are following the rules. I mean, it seems way, way different out there than it has in the past. People just kind of doing whatever they want. I mean, that's just kind of what we see, and we get calls, and we'll talk about that. Yeah, traffic's definitely, again, from different perspectives, if you look at it across the country, it's definitely, it looks like really bad, but I'll tell you the numbers, shockingly. So NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, puts out annual statistics. In 2019, our fatalities were 36,000 per year, roughly. In 2020, again, with COVID, they went up to 39,000. 2021 shot up to 43,000. And then dipped a little in 2022 to 42,000 and now back to 40,000. So we saw them peak a little bit after COVID. Certainly people's driving habits changed, no doubt about that, after COVID. They're coming down a little bit, but way higher than they traditionally have been still. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. And then, you know, more concerningly, Wall Street Journal did an article May 2nd, 2024, and they're talking about specifically drunk driving deaths. And we're talking about impaired driving, like you said, David, and it could be for any under the influence of any drug or alcohol. That is increasing, and that is a concern for us. So they say drunk driving deaths have increased to levels not seen in almost 20 years. Wow. So that's really high. And, you know, drunk driving arrests have gone down, which we know. And there's a number of reasons for that. And we could talk about that. But they cite understaffing, chronic understaffing of law enforcement, which, yeah, guilty. I mean, that's definitely where we're at right now. And then they talk about lack of public concern, which I don't know how they determine that, but that's their opinion. And then the national backlash against police stops. Again, you know, there's been some of that over the last couple of years, too. So it is having an effect. So a little mixed bag there about, you know, fatalities in general and then specifically with the DUIs, but definitely an issue of concern for law enforcement.
I got a quick question. Does it break out the drunken driving deaths by drunken driving? Because we just had a horrific incident up here in Glenview a couple weeks back. Some lunatic was driving on Willow Road or Lake Road in a very narrow residential area in excess of 100 miles an hour, T-boned a kid that just would graduate at Glenbrook South High School, and his girlfriend, you know, the guy that T-boned the two high school kids, perfectly fine. The kid driving the car, he's dead, and his girlfriend was in serious condition at Glenbrook Hospital. Does that break out if it's the drunken driver or if it's just drunken driver caused accidents and deaths?
NHTSA really probably goes into great detail with all that. I was only able to pull up and quickly pulled up just kind of the more global trends.
Got it.
But yeah, so couldn't answer the specific, you know, specifically as to what the causes are, but they do. NHTSA's like, they go into every detail. Our crash reports contain all kinds of information that we submit, as do the other states. So they're able to say, you know, speeding generally is the biggest contributor to fatalities and to crashes. It always ranks number one, but they're able to determine what usually precipitates a crash or a fatal crash, but not my notes.
All right, so let's go around the horn, and Chief Lally, what are you seeing out in Elgin? You know, one of the largest cities in Illinois. You've got expressways there. You've got huge entertainment complexes. There are lots of bars, lots of restaurants. You know, people like going out, having a couple of pops and getting behind. What are you seeing and what are you doing to try to combat that from happening in your town?
Yeah, so first I would say to Lou's point, you know, what you see, I think, especially post-COVID, I think, you know, there was a point in time where there were literally no cars on the road. So it gives that kind of false impression where people are like, oh, you know, everything is okay. And then all of a sudden, people start, you know, the stay-at-home orders are done and people start traveling again and motorists are on the roadway. You know, I think post-COVID, I think that little break, it really shined a light on how much traffic there is and traffic complaints. I will tell you, at my Chiefs meeting, neighborhood group meetings, emails, we get a lot of traffic complaints. So our neighbors, you know, people in neighborhoods are saying people are speeding, they're running stop signs. And so we do things on our end. Obviously, we have a traffic division, and, you know, we'll put out a speed trailer. And obviously, we only have X number of officers, and to deploy your resources and to allocate your resources efficiently, you want to know what time are these people speeding? So you put a speed trailer out there, you collect the data, you narrow it down to a certain point of time, and you say, okay, let's go do some saturation patrol and try to, you know, make an impact. And so I always tell a lot of community members, you know, because the other thing I'll hear is we never see a police officer in our neighborhood. People are speeding. And so I said, well, even though you may not see the officer, they may be there, but you just, when you walked out of your home or to your car, you didn't happen to see him. But that perception that, you know, there's not enough officers to, you know, really kind of affect a reduction of speed complaints, traffic complaints, whatever the case may be. So, you know, we routinely, whether that's directed patrols, we have officers who some of their ancillary duties, they really just focus on certain neighborhoods where we get a lot of traffic complaints. We have a transparency hub where you can go online and you can submit your traffic complaint. We have traffic data out there too, because a lot of times people will say, I've never, you know, you're not making any traffic stops in this neighborhood. You can go on our transparency site and you can see the traffic stops that have been done. With DUIs, obviously we participate in a state grant. So our focus, you know, we have officers who are, you know, really focusing, especially on holiday weekends, on DUI enforcement. I'll give you guys just some stats, you know, overall in Elgin. I just pulled it up this morning, and I'll give you kind of like a 5-year snapshot. So in 2019, we had 156 DUIs. So that's the number that we arrest that we made. 2020, it went down to 98. And so obviously, again, stay-at-home orders, people are not out, businesses are closed. 2021, it jumped a little bit to 103. 2022, 103. 2023, 99. And then 2024, year-to-date, we are at 102. So, you know, when you look at those wow. numbers, you know, that's a – and again, those are from – let me clarify too. Those are from May year to date. So those are just the first 5 months of May for each of those years. So we're on track probably to double, you know, maybe get to those pre-pandemic numbers. But I will tell you, it is absolutely, I mean, when I drive to work in the morning, I live in Elgin, and I will tell you, I mean, it's, if you literally just take, like, you just, your only job is to look to see how many traffic offenses you could see within 1 mile radius, it's everywhere, right? So we obviously don't have the resources to put an officer on every corner, but we are very particular in terms of using our data, doing that deep dive analysis to get the best times, the best places where we then can use our resources. So between grants with the state, our traffic unit, our patrol officers, making sure the community knows what we're doing as well. It's important that people know that we're trying to put some resources there, and we're trying to, I could tell you probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and this is just a short story, but we were having a community meeting, and people in that neighborhood, they were very upset about speeders, and people would cut through their streets because it was, you know, adjacent to main roads. And so we put a speed trailer out there. We get the data. Here's the time frame that you're probably going to catch most speeders. And on top of it, the speeding, you know, people at the most were doing maybe 8 to 10 miles over. So they really, it wasn't this egregious 25 miles per, you know, over. And nonetheless, we go out there, we do a direct patrol for a couple days, and come to find out the people who are speeding in the neighborhoods are the people that live there. And so we go back to the neighborhood group and we say, hey, just so you guys know, we've written some citations, we've done some education, some enforcement. But, you know, these are people that live in the neighborhood. They're not necessarily people who are, you know, cutting through. And on top of that, you know, I think it's very hard, especially with speeding or traffic issues, the perception that people feel, like, you can't overcome someone's feeling. If I tell you, I feel like I never see an Elgin police officer, I feel like I can counter that by saying, okay, well, here's the data, here's the information, here's what we're doing. But people are still going to feel a certain way. So that's just a constant education and communication, and then enforcement when it's appropriate. So that's kind of what we're seeing here in Elgin.
I think we're just the way society has changed. just making a big macro statement, your perception, a person's perception is their own reality. And, yes. And you could tell them whatever you want to tell them. Hey, we've had 10 patrol cars through your neighborhood in this 24-hour period of time. And five of them, you know, were when you were sleeping, probably when you want somebody patrolling when you're sleeping, and they won't hear it because they didn't physically see or personally see the car. So thank you for sharing that. Dave, what are you guys doing up there in DeKalb? I know we talked about this a couple of weeks back. You just had that officer with DeKalb County. That was a drunk driving incident who lost her life with that truck driver. So what can you do? What are you doing? How are you combating this? And how are you bringing this awareness to the residents of DeKalb?
Yeah, so, I mean, just like Chief Lally said, I mean, the one of the hardest things to do is to change someone's driving behavior. I mean, truly, like, I mean, and that's really the goal. I mean, it's not about the tickets. I think, like Chief Jogman said earlier, you know, the money that we receive from these citations is not this, you know, we're not making, you know, money off this. City makes a certain portion of it, of course, comes that way, but it's, you know, it's divided out different things. A lot of people just assume, oh, well, they're writing tickets and they have a quota, which we do not. Most of the police departments have gotten away from quotas. I don't know too many departments that still have those days. But at the end of the day, we're trying to change driving behavior because due to COVID, we were in a caretaker mode during COVID as law enforcement. So and when you're in a caretaker mode, you're not making traffic stops. You're not getting out. You know, we were trying to, and I was with the state police at the time. You know, I told the guys, look, we're trying to reduce the contact that you have so you won't get COVID. We're trying to prevent that. So, of course, we reduced traffic stops. And one of the things we saw post COVID, which was weird. We started seeing some major crashes at like 8:30 in the morning on the interstates. And the reason why, because normally at 8:30, you're in gridlock, right? Post-COVID, when people just started getting back, they were traveling in traffic patterns that would resemble 12 a.m.
Yeah, and it was the Autobahn. Yeah.
8:30 on a Tuesday, right? Yeah. And we were seeing rollovers. We were like, holy, you know. But it was because normally we were in gridlock. You're doing 2 or 3, 4 miles an hour, usually 8:30 on a Tuesday morning on the Dan Ryan. A little bit after, like post-COVID, before people started coming back to work, I mean, they were doing 80, 90 miles an hour. And they were rolling their cars over. So, I mean, it was insane. But like Chief Lally talked about, like when you're in your town, I dropped my mom off Saturday and she lives on a residential street on the south side of Chicago. Parking is limited. So usually I'll double park and then I'll get out and let her out, you know, walk her to her door or whatever. So I'm getting out of the car. This guy blows past me and I'm telling you the street, you know, Chicago streets, they're tight. This dude had to be, man, I mean, he had to do 60, at least 60. And he shot right past us. And, you know, and my mom was like, look, they don't care. I'm like, yeah, I know. I mean, it's obvious they don't. So, and when she's, you know, and it's true. I don't think people understand the impact of these. Because it's one of those things like, oh, it's just a minor violation. Yeah, until somebody gets killed. You know, then what? You know, it's minor until then, right? And as you mentioned, you know, Deputy Musil, who died just recently because she was struck, doing exactly what we're talking about, traffic enforcement. She was on the side of the road, you know, running stationary radar, and she got hit by an impaired driver, right? I mean, our officers are in these perils all the time because we encourage them to do these things. Now, we encourage them to do them in locations that are safe, but sometimes, I mean, it just finds you. It's a weird dynamic. Hard to explain, you know. It's like, oh, I run radar there my whole career, and I've never been hit. And all of a sudden, you get hit. So, it takes me back to Scott's Law. Scott Gillen was a lieutenant with the Chicago Fire Department. I know, and the reason I'm bringing this up because I was the OIC for that situation. It happened on the Bishop Ford, and that's how we got Scott's Law. And it was unfortunate. that he died. But his death didn't go in vain because we started, legislation came with Scott's Law. And even that was something that had to be taught to our drivers, you know. And now, and I've watched people as I drive on the interstate, and I'll be honest with you, the majority of the people I see now actually started to move over for law enforcement. I see it more and more. Sometimes I do my own little count as I'm driving down the interstate. I'm like, wow, they moved over. He moved over. She moved over. I'm like, all right, so now you're talking about changing. Like I said, when we're talking about driving, you know, how we can change their posture and how they drive and making them safe drivers, Dave. So unfortunately, Scott Gillen's death, as tragic as it was, we have learned to be better drivers, at least when it comes to moving over for first responders, and so forth. So it's a lot, you know, I'm like Chief Lally. I get most of my complaints that come in, Dave, traffic, speeding. That's what it is.
All right, so Lou, I'm going to throw it to you first. If you could break down what portion of the $200-some ticket, where it goes for everybody, and talk about, for everybody that doesn't know Highland Park, I mean, you've got the Edens to your west. I mean, you've got people coming from the city flying down the Edens, right? And then you got people coming out of Milwaukee, and then they hit Highland Park, and they either go east to towards Deerfield, or I'm sorry, east towards HP, or west towards Highland Park and Deerfield. So they've got that speeder mode in their veins as they're getting off the expressway. And also, can you talk about my road rage? Because you've heard me on the radio talking about wanting to put people into the wall that try to cut me off at the last minute, and then drive on the side of the road, even though you're not supposed to drive on the side of the road, and how you handle those type of instances.
All right, lots to unpack there. I will hit it quick, each little one, little nuggets. Number one, let's just start with Highland Park. We're a unique community. We do have 94, the Edens, that comes from Chicago and runs up to Milwaukee. We're right in the middle of it, and we're actually the first stop outside of the city that has a stoplight. So people are cruising on 94, doing whatever they're doing, 70, 80, 90, and then they come into Highland Park, and it becomes a community again, and they still do 70, 80, 90. So that is a huge challenge for us.
Got rid of the Clavey, that used to be a death trap back in the day.
Great point. So we talk about with all this, there's three tenets to for our listeners. There are three tenets to traffic safety. There's education, there's the enforcement part, and then there's engineering. You know, we try to do as much education as we can. We tell them again. Like, for instance, right now we're doing a high visibility enforcement campaign in Highland Park, and we've been pumping out information for weeks to let people know we're coming. Come on, you know, please. We look for, our goal is compliance. We don't want to write tickets, but we will, because it needs to be done. But we really, our hope and dreams are that people just drive like they're supposed to. But we do the education piece. It's really important. Then we do the enforcement piece if need be. And to your point, the Clavey Road became such an issue. It was a four-way. Because it was one of the first stops, you know, again, as you get into Highland Park on 94, there were a lot of fatalities there. So they re-engineered the road, and now there's an overpass there, and you just go under it. And so those are all the things that we do in our country to try to mitigate and make traffic a little bit safer. And they all complement each other. So we do all of those things. You know, so in Highland Park, it's no different. We have speed trailers, we do assessments, we do our traffic unit, our officers will pull people over when they can. But we talked about it. There's just so much going on right now in our world that is a concern for us, but you only have so many officers out there, and it gets challenging. So a little behind the badge info for our listeners. So, you know, very interesting. You know, we as cops, we know this. I can't tell you how many times people will call us and complain about traffic. And then we, again, invariably go over and pull people over. And they're one of the first people we pull over. And they literally, I've had people say, yeah, I want you to stop them, not me. Well, we're all part of the solution. We're all part of the problem. So that is something we run into all the time. The other thing we run into, as Chief Bird mentioned, is quotas. You know, I know you have a quota. You're only writing this because you have a quota. No, we don't. Actually, in 2014, Governor Quinn passed a no quota law in the state of Illinois. There are no quotas for police officers. We're doing it for safety. I know people don't want to maybe think that, but that is what we're doing. And then the last one is, yes, the big one we hear is, you know, I pay your salary. And yes, you do. Interestingly, in Highland Park, so interesting fact for people, and they can go look up their local jurisdiction. You know, on your tax bill, the municipality piece of it is so small. I think in Highland Park, we get 7%, I think, is roughly of your tax bill out of $1,000, you know, whatever that ends up, we get roughly is what we get, 7%. The schools, the park district, the water district, I mean, all those mosquito abatement, there's all these other fees. And so 7% roughly is what we get. When you think about what you get, public safety, police, fire, potholes, public works, I mean, for 7%, that's pretty incredible. So a traffic ticket, same concept. I don't have Lake County's couldn't get find mine, so I pulled up just online, and you can go to your local, I'm sure, county. So this is Madison County, Illinois. So I'm sure it's, you know, it's pretty indicative of what everybody else sees. Okay, so they have a little thing. You can go look it up at Madison County, IL.gov. Average ticket for $120 ticket. They kind of break it down. This is for a 21 and over speeding ticket because there is a difference. 17.8% goes to the municipality that wrote the ticket. So we're talking about $21. 16% goes to a vehicle fund. So there's a statewide vehicle fund that, you know, police departments tap into, but that's a statewide fund. The county gets 15%, so $18. There's a document storage part for $15, 12%. Child advocacy is 10%, goes to an advocacy center in their county. State gets 6.7% to the treasurer's office. There's an e-citation fine, 4.2%, $5 just to pay for the hardware for the court. Drug court gets 4.2%, $5 for a drug court that helps addicts get treatment. Illinois State Police Ops gets 4.2%, and that just there's some statute that they get some money about the automation fee. Automation fees, another different one for the judge's office, 4.2%, $5. And the circuit clerk gets $5, 4.2%. And then just interestingly, when you look at an underage 21 ticket, it's a different breakdown. Specifically, the fine that goes back to the arresting agency is 1.1%. So $1.34 out of that $120. So when we say we ain't doing it for the revenue, we ain't doing it for revenue. 1.4 or 1.1% of that ticket to anybody under 21 is $1.34 out of the 120 that comes back to us. So it's interesting. I mean, again, people aren't going to know that, and that's why we're doing this. We want people to understand. We get it. Getting a ticket, not fun. I will tell you, my personal, I'm going to say it because I got a state police guy on here. I've gotten one ticket in my life. It was by an airplane. So on my way down to Champaign, Illinois for school, and I literally saw these stripes on the pavement. I saw a sign that says police enforce with an airplane. I'm like, do they really do that? Yeah, they do, actually. Because I had a crazy state trooper jump out in front of my car and point me to the side of the road, down the road a little bit. And I pulled over and I waited and I looked in my rear view and she was still like pointing people over and everything. So I'm like, oh, maybe it was an obstruction. So I took off. That was a bad, bad, bad move. She came and found me. I mean, hand to God, I really thought that it was, I didn't know what it was. I was 19 at the time. I thought she was just getting people out of the way. Oh, she educated me. I got my ticket. I went to court. I paid my whatever it was. And so it's not fun. Citations, cops hate writing tickets. Really, we do. It's not something we want to do, but we also understand there is a correlation between enforcement, education, engineering, and our crashes. There have been studies that prove that more enforcement, you're going to have safer roads. You're going to change driver behavior. It takes time, but that's why we do it.
Can I just throw this out there now with the population? The popularity of the dispensary, the pot dispensaries all over the state, right? I mean, that and gambling are probably the only two things that are keeping us afloat here in Illinois. How are you detecting driving while impaired and writing citations if somebody is stoned out of their mind? I mean, obviously you pull somebody over for drunk driving because they're weaving. You could do your tests, walk the line, blow, or take them in to get a blood test. You know, there's a number of different things. Are there any tests to determine that somebody's stoned, so high that what they're driving is not only impacting their safety, but others on the road. How are you guys working through that? Chief Lally, we'll start with you.
Yeah, we have a few of our officers are trained as drug recognition experts. So it's DRE. And so that's I think it's a pretty intense class that they have to go to. Cause I know when my guys come back, they're like, oh my God, it's like traffic reconstruction class at Northwestern, right? It's very, very hard. So we have officers specifically that are trained, you know, for us, our traffic unit, you know, if there's an officer, like probably, you know, the other chiefs on here, their departments, my department is so young. There's a vast majority of officers that have about 10 years or less, and a lot of them have 5 years or less. So when they stop that vehicle and they believe it, you know, this person to be impaired, and if it seems a little bit where it's not an alcohol, they can't smell it, they might think it's due to drugs, they can call over a traffic officer. We can call someone in to help facilitate that process. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to mention too, just quickly, you know, in terms of, you know, with traffic crashes too, because this is something that, you know, I had a conversation with, a lot of times when there's a traffic crash, especially if it's really bad, you know, you'll see, and this is the human side to the traffic crash and what happens. So when someone is involved in a traffic crash, especially when it's a fatality, you know, we are going to come out on social media, because 10 years ago, social media was not really an issue in terms of, you know, how this correlates to the human side of what police officers do and some of the tragedies that occur. When we push out on social media, the road is closed, right? Road is closed, traffic crash. We're not going to be putting out until, you know, probably if we even do, that it's a fatality for some time. Because the first thing is, when a fatality happens, there's all these notifications that have to occur to the family, to the friends. And so I caution a lot of times too, people who are very curious about a traffic crash, they want to put that out on social media because everybody wants to know everything that's going on. The problem is when you take that picture of that traffic crash and now somebody knows that's my husband's car, that's my girlfriend's car, that's my mom's car. Now you've just put that out there to the world, and yeah, people don't have the time to grieve appropriately or to be notified in a sensitive and caring way, whether that's with a clergy member or the officer. That's another hard part of this. Like the officers that respond to traffic crashes, especially when they're pretty traumatic, some of my officers, you know, that follows them. Like that, you show up, especially if it's a young kid and your kid is the same age, and now you have to look at this. So it's the safety component, you know. So a lot of times when people complain, I got a traffic ticket, or I'm going to make a complaint because the officer stopped me because, you know, whatever. They're out there doing their job for safety because the community should expect safety, and that's part of their job. But it's also because they've witnessed some of the traumatic things that can happen as a result of a traffic crash. It doesn't necessarily have to be fatal, right? It's life-altering. So, I sometimes caution people, you know, especially with social media, you know, we'll get questions like, well, is there a traffic crash? What's going on? Why this? It's like, well, give us a little bit of time, because if I was a family member, I don't want to be notified through social media that somebody that I care deeply for and love is killed. So, you know, I think sometimes if people take that perspective a little bit and push in some of the humanistic things to why the police do what we do, it's because of the things that we witness and the tragedy that we don't want to happen to, you know, young kids. There was just a traffic crash, a neighboring agency, and I heard it on the news. These kids just graduated high school, right? And now all of a sudden you think about that, right? Like 18 years old, the world is wide ahead of them, right? This is like the prime of your life and everything. And then your life is taken away because someone doesn't know, because they needed to hurry up and get somewhere, or they needed to, you know, they're impatient, you know? So I think sometimes, like, if people pause and take a moment to think about those type of things, it kind of comes full circle as to why we do what we do.
Dave, what do you guys do to help your officers, to build on Chief Lally, that go to these accident sites? It's PTSD. I mean, there's, you know, there's no other way. It's just like a soldier coming back from war. What do you guys do? What do you do to support your officers that, you know, witness something horrific?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's constant. Like you said, these are, It's not the big, you know, it's not like you're getting, you know, it's the small razor cuts. We talk about this, small cuts. We get a lot of them, you know, throughout your career. I mean, all, you know, myself, Chief Lally, Chief Jogman, we've been doing this job for a very long time. So we've had all these small cuts and, you know, and we talked about this, I think before, how things just trigger you, certain events, certain locations, certain smells, all these things. So they, you know, and one of the hardest things that, you know, Chief Lally, you know, spoke on it a little bit about, you know, the notification. Like, I'm telling you, that was probably one of the hardest things that I learned early on in my career was doing a death notifications, you know, and especially from a crash because it was unexpected, you know. And, you know, people go to work and their loved ones expect them normally. Hey, well, they'll be home by 5 o'clock. They'll be home by 6 o'clock. And then when you show up and they know. Believe me, they know. I always told my mom, I say, Mom, if the police ain't knocking at your door, don't worry about it. If they're calling, then things are probably going to be all right. But if you got someone knocking at your door, that's a different story. So they know. As soon as you show up, Dave, I mean, I'm telling you, I've done some notifications where as soon as they open the door, the families just... they just collapse down on their knees because they already know. And it's the saddest thing. And you go into some of these situations, you know, you have maybe a mother with two or three young kids and there's no one else. They're, you know, you're all they have for this short period of time. And you have to show that empathy and the sympathy for them to you're all they have. You're almost family to them. For this short period of time, and you don't even know them. So that's what people don't understand how, you know, as you talk about the PTSD, we have to engage with someone we don't know in their hardest of times and hold them. I mean, you give them love that, you know, you're treating them like you would treat your own family member, but you don't know them. And then you have to get, after that, you have to go back to work. You got to go back to work like that just didn't happen. I mean, you know, it's tough. It is probably one of the hardest things. That's why we, you know, we talk about doing, you know, the checkup from the neck up, right? These, you know, our guys constantly, we go get doctors, you know, our physical health. We always, oh, well, I'm physically healthy, but are you mentally healthy? So I love it right now that our guys go and see therapists on a regular basis. And there's no stigma attached to it. Back in the day, oh, my God. Dave, you couldn't mention this. You couldn't even say this back in the day. Nowadays, so I got a sergeant who goes every month. And he says, Chief, yep, I got my appointment. So, I'm going to go see my therapist. And, you know, and it gets him whatever it takes. Whatever it takes to get you through it all, Dave, is what we encourage. We assist them with this. When there's a major incident, we have a critical incident debrief afterward. If it's a major incident where multiple people are impacted and, you know, we try to, you know, some of it we make mandatory for some people who might have been outliers and maybe didn't actually participate in the actual incident, you know, directly, but were affected by it indirectly. We offer them the opportunity to go as well. And it's very impactful. And I would tell you, most officers will initially, and I'm sure Chief Lally and Chief Jogman can attest to this, that they push back on it initially. They don't want to go initially. But I guarantee you this, every time they leave, they say, I'm glad I went. I was like, I was like, we already know. We've been through this ourselves, guys. We know. Yeah, we said, I'm good, Chief. I don't need it. I'm good. And then they say, no, you're going. And then when you go, you come out of there, you like, Chief, thank you for making me go because I needed it. So those are some of the things that we do, Dave, on a regular basis. Chief Lally, Chief Jugman, they do the same thing. It's all about how you guys, you know, every time I look at my summary, I see a bad incident, I call them and say, how you feeling? And they'll say, Chief, I'm good. I mean, okay, I'm like, I know you're going to say that, but I really want to know, how do you really feel? What can I do for you? Because, you know, I mean, we're in positions now, but most of the stuff that happens, we're in our bed asleep. I mean, we're getting it on the back end, but we've been through it as young officers ourselves. So it's not like we don't know. And so I always try to make that initial contact, Dave, just to make sure that they're okay. And then we take it from there. Whatever I can do for them, money's no object. Let's get it done.
Got it. And again, we're not just talking car crashes. We're talking.
Oh, yeah. All types of events.
All types of stuff. You know, we had some a metro line going through our town, you know, the same one. You all got trains going. You know, you have suicide people jump in front of a train. I mean, all of that stuff that falls into this category. I know we're talking mental health, but yeah, again, it falls into that going to make that first call.
Sometimes there's natural deaths, Dave. But the problem with some of these natural deaths is that these people have not been, we don't even know they're dying. They've been there for weeks. Those are tough. I mean, you go into a place, you're like, oh man, he's been here for 3 weeks. I mean, the decomposing bodies. I mean, these are things that officers see all the time. And this was like, this is a natural death, but it still impacts them. I mean, you know, these images, I mean, it's like a camera. All you're doing is taking a snapshot.
Yeah.
Every time you go to an event and we all store it, Chief Valley has hers, Chief Jogman has his, all in the back of our mind. I have mine, and I just learned to manage them the best I can. And that's all you can ask for the police officers. So that's why I tell people all the time, thank the police. This job is hard. They don't understand how hard this job is sometimes. They really don't.
Yeah, Lou's problem. I'm sorry, Chief Lally, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I want to mention too is I think, and I don't know if it was prior to us talking here, but you know, the sentiment of, you know, some communities wanting to ban, you know, minor, whether it's non-moving violation vehicle infractions or these low-level moving violation infractions. So, you know, we had a police task force about 2 years ago, and one of the recommendations they made was for the city to adopt an ordinance that would ban non-moving vehicle infractions. And so, you know, the task force came up with over 20 recommendations. Vast majority of them I agreed with, but this one was one that I was very adamantly opposed to. And I think, you know, the some of the sentiment, you know, and you hear it in some states where they have civilians who are doing traffic stops because they don't want the police contact. It's like, that is a recipe for disaster. And, you know, my sentiment, was, you know, very straightforward. Like, yes, I understand the overarching reason why, right? You want to reduce contact with communities who may feel marginalized, right? You want to reduce racial disparities. There's a whole other, things that we do to ensure that happens, whether it's fair and impartial training, body-worn cameras, training, accountability, all that stuff. But on the flip side, when you start saying, well, we're going to tell officers not to start vehicles for minor offenses. Well, the problem is that you can adopt an ordinance as a city, but that ordinance doesn't supersede the state law that allows officers to stop, right, what's in the motor vehicle code. Additionally, in Elgin, we have the state police that patrol. I have Kane County that patrols. So I have these other jurisdictions that come into Elgin. So when a community member or a person in Elgin gets stopped by a police squad, all it is the police, right? People are not, you know, well, that's the Kane County Sheriff Deputy, or they just think police. So now you can imagine the confusion that causes for community members where, you know, I would say, you know, Elgin police officers are not going to stop for this, but be advised if you're stopped by a Kane County person, a state police, that confusion, in itself is just a recipe for disaster. Secondly, you know, the traffic stop that officers sometimes do is also a crime reduction mechanism, right? It's an investigative tool that we use for, you know, bigger offenses. You know, routinely I have officers who are stopping vehicles for traffic offenses who are recovering handguns. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's a way that we're also impacting a crime reduction within our communities to utilize all our resources and implement these strategies that, you know, OK, the traffic stop is not just a traffic stop, but are we having gang issues, drug issues? Are we having robberies? Right. So that's another part of it. So as a community, you know, people should want a safe community and not tolerate criminal activity. And part of our tools is to make traffic stops and to use those traffic stops. And again, you know, doing that within procedural justice guidelines, making sure constitutional rights are not violated, right? That's a given. But, you know, there's when I hear some of these and, you know, news articles about, you know, let's have officers not stop vehicles, you know, and we had our, again, you know, my task force had recommended that. And I said, absolutely not. I mean, that was something that I am not going to agree with. Now, if the council, you know, the council decided to table the discussion, you know, ultimately the council is the one that would make that decision. But I am never going to agree to that. I mean, because there's just so many layers of things, the unintended consequences of decisions that people make that they don't think, because we got to solve this right now, right? People are upset about, you know, officers and everything that's happening in the world. And okay, but I get that. And there's a lot of things that we can discuss within that conversation, but the unintended consequences of quick judgments and not realizing the impact that you'll have on your community 5 or 10 years from now. So I think, you know, I would just say when community members hear, or if it's in the news, you really have to think a little bit deeper about, you know, are you just doing a Band-Aid approach, which then is going to ultimately lead to some really, you know, hard, I think, you know, things that will come up that that we probably could have just avoided had we just continued to do what we were doing, but keep those safeguards in place, right? Make sure your officers are doing traffic stops appropriately. Make sure search and seizure laws, make sure, you know, I think Chief Lou said, you know, officers don't want to give tickets, right? Like when you have to give a citation to someone, a lot of times they're giving warning tickets, right? It's an opportunity to have that contact and say, hey, look, I need you to, you know, slow down. And this is why, and, you know, have a great day. And of all the traffic stops that my officers make, a small number, we get complaints, very, very small number. Right. But, you know, there's that human part to it where you're like, ah, you know, I don't really want to ruin this person's day, but I kind of still want them to be safe. So I think there's like a happy medium that we can reach. But we need the community to get on board with us. So every time an officer stops you, you know, do you really have to say, I pay your salary? Like, okay. I mean, I get it. You know, you do pay our salary, but you know, there's also a reason why they're doing what they're doing. And, you know, I think a lot of times people forget that they are humans and, you know, they signed up to do this job, and this is a very difficult job. And when I tell people, we've all been police officers a very long time. When I tell people you have to come to work every day, this is your job. Mm-hmm. People are going to scrutinize everything that you do. They're going to have access to see everything that you do. You can't make a mistake because if you make a mistake, there could be all these legal repercussions from that. Every time you have contact with someone, you have to make sure that you're safe. Like it's just, think about it. What other job are, you know, where this, the scrutiny, as it should be, right? We're public officials, as it should be. But sometimes when you just take a step back and say, wow, you know, that's a lot for somebody, right? That's a lot. You know, maybe I'll just tone it down a little bit, right? Maybe I won't be screaming at the officer, you know, maybe I'll just tell him, you know, I'm unhappy and just, but you know, I really, and this is great that this podcast goes out because it just gives a little insight into the conversations that I hear with officers, right? The other chiefs hear that, you know, man, I'm just trying to do my job, right? Like now I have a complaint because I was doing traffic. Like, you know, it's, you know, I think giving a little graciousness is sometimes something that I think we all should remember.
I'm going to throw this over to Lou now. Lou, you're in a unique situation. Part of your town is Cook County, and part of your town, no, it's all Lake County? Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay,
well, I'm in many unique situations. That's just not one of them, Dave.
Right, okay.
So before you go on, so let me
go ahead.
You may have a question, but I don't want to lose a couple of things that my colleague said. So yeah, it is interesting. You know, let's look at our fire friends, and I love our fire friends. I do. I'm putting this out there. It's recorded because God, I know I'll need you when I have my eventual heart attack. But you know, firefighters can go to a home. It could be a grease fire, you know, on the stove. They go in with all their equipment, basically trash the entire house, put that thing out. And yet they'll get cookies and they'll send them everything. You know, the kind of work we do, we're costing people money, sometimes their freedom. I mean, so it is a different kind of work. You know, we are like Chief Bird said, when you see the police, there's this, we're all classically conditioned. It usually ain't good. I mean, it's like the principal or the dean calls you at home. They're not calling to tell you your son or daughter's just doing a great job. You know, it's just one of those things that we're there. where people are always like, oh my God, there's the police, something bad is happening. So when you're starting from there and then you're doing the actual work and pulling people over, they're already amped up. They're already having those feelings about police. So we do all this other work, this education, our community connections, so that we can try to balance that scale and let people know that is a part of the work we do, but we do it to keep you safe. At the end of the day, it is to keep our community safe and everybody safe. And then to just follow up on what Chief Lally and I think Chief Byrd also mentioned, you know, we were talking about, you were asked about what we can do for DUI enforcement, specifically with regards to new, legalization cannabis. We have to really, our listeners have to really get engaged and follow these laws that are proposed and then ultimately passed. I mean, I know people don't have the time. We do because it affects what we're doing, but what we're doing affects what goes on in your lives. So for example, we were working on, I was on the board for the Illinois Chiefs at the time, when they were talking about the legislation for, legalizing cannabis, one of our concerns we raised, of course, because it's our area, is enforcement, safety. How do we keep people safe? They're working on some, but right now there's nothing that I think is approved. I don't think it's made it to the approved stage of a roadside safety test for law enforcement for cannabis. Okay, so we've got the breathalyzer, very effective, court proven. You can determine from reasonable certainty what somebody's blood alcohol content is, and there's a legal limit. If you're over that, boom. We don't have that for cannabis. You know, you can pull somebody over, but you don't have a way of telling that they smoke it today, yesterday. That's concerning. I mean, that was a concern for us, but they put it in place anyway. We do have the drug recognition expert officers that Chief Lally mentioned, but that is limited in number and in efficacy because even their abilities aren't, it's not a chemical test. It's not like something that's, like a blood alcohol measure. They can do observations and make judgments, and there are limited officers. So we're a little behind the eight ball with that. And now there's a pending legislation. One of the things that we had that we asked for that to help us kind of blunt the effect of people just, blunt's a bad word. I actually didn't mean the connotation, have an impact on DUIs with respect to cannabis. Was right now the law says you have to have your cannabis in a sealed odor-proof container. The reason for that is if an officer smells cannabis in your car, that's a no-no. You can't. That means we now have some probable cause to investigate further. They're actually proposing that they remove that and that the odor-proof container restriction be lifted. I don't know why. We don't know why. Which means then if there's an odor of cannabis in the car, there's nothing we can do. So legislation is a huge part of this. And to Chief Lally's point, people are trying to, they're minimizing things. And that's the concern I think we have in law enforcement. What's the big deal? No front plate. What's the big deal? Tinted windows. Well, I'll tell you, if you're the victim of a crime and you can only get a view of the car from the front and they take off, somebody shot somebody in your neighborhood. Well, you don't have a front plate now. So, we don't know who that car is. I had one recently with a family member who road raged. The person was attacking a group of young adolescents, attacking meaning following, flashing their lights. It was at night. They had tinted windows, illegally tinted windows. Nobody could see in the car. How are you going to identify that person? How are you going to make an arrest? How are you going to charge that person? So when you talk about these small, quote unquote, insignificant things, they, to Chief Lally's point, have real world implications. And I think our listeners need to know, tinted windows, it makes the car look cool, maybe keeps you cooler, we get it, but there is a legitimate reason that someday it may affect you, because when you can't identify the person who just shot at you or did some other type of crime, and you can't go to court and raise your hand and say, I saw that person, I know who they are, you have no case. We have no case. And there are a lot of those things that are going on. So traffic enforcement, again, not great spending the money, not great going to court, don't want the insurance to go up, don't want to get suspended. We get all that. So guess what the answer is? Not get rid of the laws, not enforce them, just follow them. Just drive the speed limit, drive safely, don't drive recklessly, put other people at risk, follow the rules and we're all happy and then we'll make no more traffic stops ever. I mean, that's our promise. If everybody follows the rules and does what they're supposed to, traffic stops will end. You have my word.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up to an hour here, so we like to keep it at about an hour. I'll go around the horn. Best tip you could give our listeners to stay safe. I know that Lou just said, drive the speed limit and pop an Ambien and, you know, switch to decaf and relax. Probably not pop an Ambien. Lou was not.
No, no, probably not the Ambien.
No, Lou is not on record at popping an Ambien.
No.
Yours or a family member's, but maybe switch to decaf and chill out. One tip, Chief Lally, I'll throw it to Chief Berg, go back to Chief Jogman to give us another nugget of knowledge. But, you know, as we close down this segment and this of this podcast, you know, with your experience, what would you tell our listeners about just being safe?
I would say just a couple things. First is the traffic rules and regulations are there for a reason, and make sure you know them, because a lot of times people don't know the law. So make sure you know them, especially if you have young drivers in your home, right? New drivers, make sure you take the time to do some education. Let them come down to the police station. We have simulators that they can drive on. You know, we can talk about some traffic education. So use the resources in your community. And I think secondly, right, if you see a police officer and they're pulled over on the side of the road, right, make sure that you give them the space and make sure that you're being safe and make sure that you slow down. Third, when you are driving, wherever it is that you're driving, right, just, you know, maybe take a step back and instead of coming in, you know, hot, maybe just takes like a peaceful approach, right? So, and think about the humanistic side to some of the things of what we're doing, whether you do not want, like, if you personalize it, right? I wouldn't want my family member in a crash, right? Maybe I should slow down. The trauma that comes from it, the financial impact, the lawsuits that happen. So instead of, you know, aggressively driving and giving everybody the finger and whatever it is that you're doing, right? Maybe just take a deep breath and slow it down a little bit. And hopefully that, you know, in that 1 or 2 seconds where you're aggravated, it'll pass. So I would say just be respectful of other drivers and ensure that you're doing your part.
All right. Well, we asked for one. We got seven. So yeah, Chief
I'll give
Bird,
you 10 more too.
Well, like, yeah. You know what, Dave? She, you know, the reason why is because it really is so hard to give what's one. And I'm with Chief Lally. I just want to make one point about minor traffic offenses. Let me just tell the people who are listening that Timothy McVeigh was stopped for a registration violation, and he was an Oklahoma City Bomber. Think about that. And that's why I tell people all the time, don't be so quick to say, oh, they're bothering us. They're just messing with us. That's the only reason. No, we're not. I mean, there's a reason behind, like Chief Lally said, these laws are in place for a reason. We stop people for improper lane usage. You know why? Because it causes accidents. We stop people for falling too closely. You know why? Because it causes accidents. We stop people for speeding, of course, because it causes accidents. So there's a method to the madness. These equipment violations, most officers write warnings for those. I will guarantee you. Nobody's trying to write you a ticket for having a cracked windshield. But is it unsafe? Sure, it could bust on you at some point. So we're just telling you, you should get that fixed. The headlight out, you should get that fixed. You got one out. If the other one goes out, now you have none. And you might not even be aware of it. There are people who they get mad. Oh, my God, I can't. Why'd you stop me? Ma'am, your muffler's falling off. Just for the record. I mean, so I'm just letting you know, just before you, while you're yelling at me, like Chief Lally says, that you come out on a bag on these officers, they might be doing something to help you. And my last point is this, is just be courteous. Mm-hmm. You, as drivers, we have to be more courteous to each other. Allow people to get in front of you. How many times, you know, they got, oh, I'm not letting them in. Why are you doing that? I mean, that's what the yield, you're supposed to yield. Know the rules of the road. I mean, you know, but I think the biggest thing is just be courteous, Dave. I'll just leave it with that.
And I'll add, before I go over to Lou, be nice to also stick your hand out the window and say thank you for letting me in.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. It drives me crazy.
Cost you nothing, Dave.
Cost you nothing. I always roll down the window. Hey, thanks, buddy. Thanks. You know, appreciate, you know, the merge here. It just people don't do that anymore. It's like drives me crazy. On top of the other 500 things that Lou has heard me talk about on the radio up here. So, again, you know, maybe like, hey, you know, I appreciate the space there to merge in before I hit the embankment here. So, Chief Jogman.
Yeah, all right. So we'll end it on a high note. So I would say, again, we get it, everybody. We really do. I will tell you, when I see a police officer behind me, pulling behind me, even to this day, I'm looking at that rearview mirror going, what did I do? What is it? Even me after 32 years, I still feel that way. And I'm a cop. So we get it. I would say just a good nugget for everybody. If, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but, you know, we do use unmarked police cars out there to do traffic enforcement. Sometimes you see some things in an unmarked police car. They have lights and everything, but not stickers or a light on the top. And it's important because it's an important tool for us to see traffic in its natural state as opposed to with a marked squad car. But if you're ever concerned, if a unmarked police car puts their lights on and they're pulling you over, you can do a couple of things. You can put your hazards on to let the officer know that, you know, that you're aware. But maybe you're not sure they're really a police officer. Put the hazards on. So then you can drive somewhere well lit if it's nighttime, or somewhere populated if it's daytime and you want to be somewhere safe. And you can absolutely dial 911 and, you know, just let the officer know. So it is a legitimate officer. They know that you're not trying to run or do anything silly, and call 911 and say, I'm being pulled over by a police officer. I wanted to check. Yes, you are. You know, that officer is with us. And that way you don't have to be nervous or worried about, you know, an unmarked police car, because it can be confusing, because unfortunately there are people out there that use those inappropriately, illegally, and try to take advantage of people. So they impact us. So the last thing on a high note, used to have a radio guy up here in Chicagoland area, Johnny B, Jonathan Brandmeier, used to do the Love Train. He would get people paying the toll for the person behind them, and the next person would pay the toll for the next person behind them. So I'm going to ask the state of Illinois for all of us to do the Love Train, and to Chief Bird's point, wave, thank people. It goes a long way. I do it, and then the next person does it. And when we start doing that, we start affecting that culture. So if someone does you a solid out there and lets you in, wave. Trucker, wave. You know, make people know that you appreciate it and don't take it for granted. And we can change it here in Illinois.
If they love give you the finger, wave too.
Just
with all five.
No matter what. Yeah, hey. That's right. Hey, that's what you say. Love you too.
That's right. Love Train here. Love Train here in Illinois. That's what we're going to do.
All right. Well, we'll leave it on the Love Train. And if you want more information about Love Trains, you can contact Chief Jogman at the Highland Park Police Department. He's got nothing going on right now. It's pretty slow day. It's been a pretty slow week, hasn't it, Lou? You haven't had
business as usual.
Not much going on in Highland Park past week or two. Yeah. All right. This has been another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. We appreciate you listening. You could send us comments down below, email all of us, and give us some suggestions on future episodes. While we were talking before, guys, about that First Amendment, I think that's a great topic for another, for a podcast, upcoming podcast next week, a couple weeks, because a lot of our listeners see those videos, you know, of the police pullovers. And what we're talking about is, I don't have to show you my license. Why'd you pull me over? I want to see all that stuff. And the people get it on video, and it's their First Amendment right. So I think that would be interesting to dive deeper into that, because, again, it's all over the place, and the World Wide Web is seeing all the stuff. So this has been another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Looking to refinance, purchase a home, give me a call, 855-56-DAVID, 56david.com. Chief Lally, Chief Bird, Chief Jogman, thanks. And you guys be safe and have a great day.